Right after Thanksgiving, a lot of families go out to search for the perfect Christmas tree. And this year, the Waukesha County Land Conservancy offered a unique opportunity to do that. The Conservancy is in the process of restoring an old Christmas tree farm to its original habitat. For the past few years, after Thanksgiving, they've invited community members to buy and cut down Norway spruces and other Christmas tree varieties on the property to help transform it into a nature preserve. An organizer of that project is with us to talk about the restoration effort and what it means for the local ecosystem. You could join in at 800-642-1234 if you have a question about this restoration effort, or have you ever been involved in restoring a natural landscape in your community, maybe in your backyard? Call in at 800-642-1234 and tell us about it. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. Helen Holtz is the Land Management Director for the Waukesha County Land Conservancy. Helen, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Hi, Rob. Thank you for having me.
Can you tell us a little bit about the history of the property and start? What was its original habitat?
I'd love to. So pre-European settlement, much of Waukesha County actually used to be oak savanna and grassland. So there wasn't a whole lot of trees, and especially not pines and spruces in this area.
Can you talk about the difference between the different kind of trees, maybe the ones we think of as Christmas trees versus those oaks, and what they mean for the ecosystem there in Waukesha County?
Sure. So the pines and spruces that were planted there were planted back in the 90s. The farm owners who had it were creating a Christmas tree farm. So these trees were very closely planted together. There was no intention of these trees ever growing to full maturity. And so when we inherited this property through the Waukesha Lakes Conservancy, we wanted to give back to our community and also lighten the load for us. So this is a great way for community to be involved and a great way to help slowly kind of get rid of these trees that don't provide much ecological habitat for this area.
Yeah, can you talk a little bit about that community involvement effort? Christmas tree shoppers are coming home with a tree and helping this multi-year project at the same time, it sounds like.
Yeah, so this preserve is open to the public. It's free. I encourage any community member to come check it out and see the restoration projects. But this is about a 40-acre preserve. It's neighboring Calhoun County Park, which is also really nice to go check out. And so you can see about 7 acres we have created back into an oak savanna and prairie. So there's a few oaks that are planted, but it's mostly grasses and perennial flowers.
Can you talk about what maintaining and restoring this patch of land is going to mean for the wider area in terms of water and other side benefits?
Yeah, so the Calhoun Creek goes right through this property. And unfortunately, when this property was used for agriculture and the Christmas tree farm, anything, all the rain that was going through it, that was coming from the road, from neighboring properties, it was basically going straight into that creek. Now that we're planting native vegetation along that creek, we're creating this buffer zone, and that acts like a sponge. And so it helps to really help clear up the water and keep the water clean. And that creek goes all the way down to Muskego Lakes area.
So oak savanna, that oak trees and savanna, you mentioned the grasslands. Who are some of the animal residents who would appreciate an oak savanna landscape?
Basically, any native animal here is going to be very appreciative. So these pines and spruces, they aren't providing much habitat for really any animal, especially insects. These non-native trees can host maybe 2 or 3 insects, but a native oak can host over 300 species of insects. And we're looking at the food web. All these birds need insects. Even birds that we don't think would eat insects need to have insects for their young. They need that fast protein for their babies. Mm. So even birds like hummingbirds, seed-eating birds, they really rely on insects. So this is really helpful for birds as well.
Helen Holtz is with us, Land Management Director for the Waukesha County Land Conservancy. We're talking about their efforts to turn an old Christmas tree farm into an ecological preserve and how they've invited community members to come help by harvesting trees for the holiday season. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you worked on some kind of habitat restoration project, whether it's oak, savanna, or prairie, or fill in the blank. Do you have questions about this project and its process and how it's going? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation with Helen Holtz, Land Management Director for the Waukesha County Land Conservancy. We're talking about the Conservancy's process of restoring an old Christmas tree farm back into its original habitat, how they've invited community members to help by harvesting their holiday tree there. And you could join in at 800-642-1234. If you have a restored habitat in your area that you've watched maybe change over the years, love to hear from you at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Helen, I think a lot of times when we think of land conservation and conservancies, we might think of rural areas or parks and forests, you know, the less populated states. You're there in Waukesha County, the third most populous county in the state. Could you talk about some of the unique challenges maybe of land conservation in Waukesha County?
Sure. So as we're the third most populated, we're also the first growing population county. So we are growing so fast. So it is that much more important that we are putting aside some land and water to preserve and protect for future generations.
What are some of those benefits for a populated county like Waukesha to having these restored environments around?
Not only is it great for our community, since every single one of our owned preserves is open to the public, but it also creates wildlife corridors. It creates habitat. It's great for, you know, a lot of different things.
Let's talk a little more about this Christmas tree restoration, Christmas tree farm restoration project. Where is it in terms of development? As you mentioned, this is a multi-year project, not something that's going to happen overnight.
Yeah, so we are definitely looking at least several more years, probably more. Again, there was a lot of trees planted. And even if the trees are closely planted, now they're starting to reach maturity. If you don't have the ceiling height for some of these taller trees, which I know a lot of people don't, you can, you know, cut them where you want them to be. You can create your own height. So that's the nice part. You don't have to feel wasteful. These trees are serving their purpose.
Yeah, some people might wonder, wouldn't it be more efficient to just go in with the big equipment, take down all the pine and other trees at once?
Yeah, there's pros and cons to that as well. But this way, we're getting our community involved. These trees are serving a greater purpose. They're bringing joy to the holiday season. My husband likes to jokingly call this event Helen's back-saving event because it's a little less work on our end.
Is this something you've seen done in other communities, or as far as you know, is this a Waukesha County original?
That's a great question. I don't know. I haven't heard of other conservancies doing that, but I'm sure there's not a lot of old Christmas tree farms that are now in preserves.
If somebody's out there listening thinking, hey, wait, we do have that, how would you recommend they get started on that restoration project?
Please give us an email, give us a phone call. We're always here to help. Even if you're not part of our immediate Waukesha County community, we want to make sure we are helping in any way we can.
What is the value of having people, you know, it maybe come and harvest a Christmas tree, maybe just come to visit the project? What's the importance of having some community buy-in and engagement with a long-term project like this?
I mean, this is one of our biggest donation drives of the year. It helps us so much, and not only with this preserve, but we have about 3,500 acres throughout Waukesha County. So your donation of $50 per tree, it provides so much impact for much more than just this 40-acre preserve.
What are some of the other projects you have going on around the county now?
We have lots and lots of projects going around. We have several preserves that have trails throughout, so you can actively hike these preserves. We have more natural state areas that don't really have trails. So if you feel like foraging or bushwhacking, more power to you. We definitely have some beautiful ponds and lakes and rivers for people to enjoy.
Could you name some names for people maybe who are thinking, oh, I live near but not in Waukesha County? maybe I'd like to go for a stroll. What are some of the highlights you point people toward?
I know the ones with trails is the Chapman Trupke Preserve. That one is a wonderful one because it actually borders Old World, Wisconsin. So you can kind of make a fun day out of that.
And is this something that you pitch to people like, hey, this is, we've got a lot of great stuff there in Waukesha County. This is another selling point for people to visit or maybe even move into the communities there?
Yes. If you are like-minded and you want to help protect our environment, we would love to have you in Waukesha County.
Different counties in the state, of course, have different natural environments of origin. Not all are oak savannas. Do you consult with your counterparts around the state to share notes on restoration efforts for different kinds of ecosystems?
Definitely. There are so many wonderful resources. And a lot of us, even if they're not the same ecosystem, we still face a lot of the same challenges. So other conservancies are a great resource for us.
Let's bring on a caller. Travis is with us in Mequatego. Travis, hi.
Hey.
What'd you want to tell us about?
So we have one of your Christmas trees. We found out about it about probably a week before that program was going on. And I think it's the most important Christmas tree that we've ever had.
Excellent, Travis. And what did you think? You got to go out in the landscape, I think, and pick the tree. What did you think of the scenery there as it's slowly in transition?
I think it's awesome. There were quite a few people there, which was heartening to see that a lot of people want to help out with this project. Just restoring the land, I think, is an awesome idea. Just taking these Christmas trees and eventually it will become that oak savanna that you're talking about.
Travis, thanks so much for sharing that experience. And Helen, before I let you go, I should ask, if there are people in the area who are maybe, you know, buy their tree a little later, are there still some up for grabs this year?
There are definitely, unfortunately, not this year. But next year, we're definitely planning on having the event two times. We're hearing a lot of feedback where I understand it's a busy season this time of year. So we're doing the event two times next year. Definitely keep an eye out on our social media and join our monthly email blast. But definitely keep in touch for next year.
Helen, we'll leave it there. Thanks so much for sharing this with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Helen Holtz is the Land Management Director for the Waukesha County Land Conservancy. She talked to us about how the Conservancy is transforming an old Christmas tree farm back into its original oak savanna and prairie habitat and how community members have helped by harvesting their own Christmas trees there, including Travis, it turns out. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Back in the day, in my 20s, I used to hang out with people a lot. No particular plan or agenda. We'd show up at each other's houses, talk, maybe play a game, watch TV, maybe not. Now, not so much. When I do get together with people, it's premeditated and usually planned around a specific activity. Turns out this is not just a Rob story. It's a trend, and it was going on long before COVID started. And our next guest says we're losing a lot when we lose that hangout habit. And even though people might see hanging out as an unserious activity, maybe for bored teens, it can be a radical act of reclaiming time and space for the things that really matter. You can join in at 800-642-1234. How do you stay connected to friends and community members in a very busy world? Do you have a favorite way to hang out or kill time with other people? A jam session, game night, a round of drinks? You wish you had more time to just hang out. Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Sheila Liming is associate professor in the writing program at Champlain College in Burlington, Vermont. Her latest book is called Hanging Out, The Radical Power of Killing Time. Sheila, welcome to Central Time.
Hi, Rob. Thank you for having me.
You cover a lot of territory, different kinds of hanging out. Can you give a basic definition of the hanging out state of mind and activity?
Sure. In the book, I describe hanging out as basically the act of doing very little, but crucially, the act of doing it around other people. So it's that social dynamic that's really important for me. The fact that you are spending time with others, even if you're not really doing anything too constructive.
I mentioned my hanging out career declining over the last bunch of years, and I always kind of assumed it was just, you know, because I'm older now than I was, and that's part of it. But you write, you start off talking about this is a trend. And even younger people seem to be hanging out. Yes, that less than younger people did. What's going on?
Yeah, I'm with you, Rob. I used to think that this was also sort of a me problem. Mm-hmm. And eventually, I think I started to consider it in a more systemic sense, that it wasn't just me, that there were also ways that we were being discouraged from hanging out, from spending time in each other's company, and also from having these kind of like open-ended experiences as opposed to highly structured experiences when it comes to those social interactions. So I started to think about it. And at the same time, because I'm a college professor, I was also thinking about it with regards to that population that I interact with, which is roughly 18 to 24-year-olds. And I was watching their habits hanging out and noticing this sort of decreased capacity for dealing with that kind of open-endedness or that free time, if you want to think of it, where there wasn't like a clear agenda in mind.
You use the word problem there. What do we lose when we don't hang out so much?
I think we lose a lot of things. And one of the things that I focus on discussing in the book a lot is the concept of stamina, that I think hanging out itself both requires stamina and also allows us to build stamina, the kind of stamina that we require for relationships, whether they're friendships or whether they're relationships with our family members or our coworkers or our neighbors or even strangers on the street. I think that stamina comes from, you know, repeated exposure, that the more we do something, the more we feel used to it, and also the more adept we feel at it. And the reverse is then also true, that if we're not practicing those acts, then we start to experience decreased stamina. And all of a sudden, when we find ourselves hanging out with a friend and it's kind of boring, or when we get into an argument with a family member, it feels like we just want to abandon the situation and walk away, as opposed to find a way to see it through.
You gave one great example, and I'm not just keying in on it because it happened to happen in Milwaukee over old fashions, but you talk about hanging out with a friend in Milwaukee over old fashions, and it wasn't great. It was, you were arguing about something, and you saw some real value to the fact that it was hanging out in person. Can you share that story?
Sure, yeah. So I open the conclusion to the book, which is called How to Hang Out, with a story about meeting up with a friend in Milwaukee. I was there for a conference. My friend, who I've known for many years, we met in college decades ago. He lives in Chicago, and I told him I was going to be in Milwaukee, and he took the train up to spend some time with me. And what's crucial about all of this is that, you know, he'd come up to see me, and then we were hanging out in this bar, a lovely little place in downtown Milwaukee called Stella's, and we were drinking old fashions, and we kind of got into this fight. And it was a big fight because we realized that we had a fundamental disagreement about our view of a particular social problem that we were both trying to dissect. And there was a moment where it felt like my friend was about to like get up and just leave the bar. But he didn't. And because he'd come all the way up on the train to see me, we ended up just sitting there in that bar for like 3 hours and like talking it out. And as we did that, what we realized is that we actually felt the exact same side or the exact same way about the issue we were debating. We just had different ideas about how we wanted to fix the issue or approach it. So there was actually more agreement than disagreement, but we had to sort of discover that for ourselves. And I often think how differently this interaction would have played out, say, if we were having it over text message or if we were having it over email or something like that. And maybe we would have just like stopped talking to each other, because that's very likely in those situations.
Talking to Sheila Liming about her latest book. It's called Hanging Out, The Radical Power of Killing Time. Sheila, I think about the possible causes of why we're steering away from hanging out together. One seems to be, we've built this society where there's so much comfort at home. There's so much entertainment accessible at home. And then on the other hand, and you give examples, sometimes hanging out goes poorly. You got stuck with the bill from a much better paid faculty member at your school one time. Things can go wrong, or it can just be boring. We take the safe bet at home and don't want to take the risk of being out with other people.
I think that's exactly it. It is easier to not leave our homes than it has ever been before, because a lot of the world now exists for us inside our homes. You know, through the internet, through digital media, we have access to a lot of things that we used to have to go out into the world to experience. And now we can experience them from the comfort of our couches. That's great. But at the same time, going back to that idea of stamina, I think it also erodes some of our social skills. If we simply accept the situation of staying home as opposed to going out, interacting with each other, spending time in each other's presence, even when it's annoying or even when it doesn't go according to plan.
You conclude the book with some, you don't quite call them rules or a manifesto, but some, I guess, guidelines to help encourage us. Before we get into those guidelines, though, just if somebody is thinking, yeah, I do miss hanging out, what's a first step? I don't think we could just show up and knock at somebody's door anymore. How do we get started in rebuilding our hangout stamina and mindset?
Well, I think one of the first steps comes with taking time. Mm-hmm. And that means basically that you have to find a way to prioritize time for hanging out with someone. And if you're a schedule-y person, that means that maybe you have to schedule that time. But, you know, what I try to emphasize in the book is the importance of scheduling that time without seeing like a clear ending point. Like, okay, we will spend exactly 45 minutes having coffee and then we will go back to our jobs or something like that.
Take time is one of your recommendations. And then also, we were just talking about risks. Take risks is another one of your suggestions. How do we get back into that attitude of maybe it's not going to go well? Maybe it's not going to be perfect, but it's still worth trying.
Yeah. Risk is a big part of that feeling that comes from leaving the world of ease that we sometimes experience when we're in our homes to a more sort of precarious situation that happens when we try to exist socially around other people. So I think understanding that risk is part of the equation is an important place to begin. And then also understanding that that doesn't mean that it's always going to go swimmingly, and that's okay. There's going to be another chance. You can try again next time around.
Now, some of the obstacles to hanging out are individual choices. But clearly in the book, you talk about, you know, work sometimes creeps into our free time. There are a lot of, I guess, structural barriers to being able to just hang out with people. What are some of those, and how do we change them?
Yeah, I talk about the creeping dimensions of work for many of us, the way that our personal computers and our phones have basically extended the workday into what would have normally been seen as our leisure time or even our sleeping time or our family time or something like that. This sense that we're always accountable to someone or something else that doesn't physically exist where we are can pull us out of social situations and also make it harder for us to exist in those social situations in the first place. So that's certainly one of the concerns. But I also talk a lot about space and about the ability to exist inside common or shared space in the book, which is getting harder and harder. Sometimes it feels like our lives are increasingly more spatially isolated, and it's difficult to find ourselves in a spot where we can just interact with people, come and go, meet strangers, have conversations that maybe might not be the sort of things we would be expecting if we were having them just with people in our social bubble.
You spend a chapter talking about hanging out online. This is something I think about a lot. Hanging out online. No, I don't think it's as good as hanging out in person, but I've got friends in states around the country. We have, you know, Discord meetups and play games and things like that. Double-edged sword. What do you think about the value of hanging out with people online?
This is a time of year where I often think about how far flung my own social network is as I send holiday cards to people. And I just noticed that I just addressed holiday cards to people in 19 states. So I feel that feeling too, that my friends and my network and even my family members are really, really spread out. And of course, the internet has provided one means for me to try to fix that situation, or at least to try to make it a little bit more manageable, that I can talk to those people relatively easily, even when they're far away from me. And, you know, I do talk about how there are benefits to hanging out on the internet. For instance, in 2014, I moved to North Dakota, where I lived for 6 years, and I didn't know anybody there. And I started hanging out more and more on the internet to try to meet friends and to have people to talk to. But I don't think that that kind of hanging out is a replacement for the kind of hanging out that we have to do in our own communities with the people who are right there in front of us.
I wanted to get into, you mentioned strangers a while ago, and I think a lot of us are shy about talking to strangers, but you say there can be a lot of value in that hangout, even if we're not going to make best friends with that stranger we meet. Leave us with some inspiration to strike up that conversation.
Right. Yeah. I had a wonderful interaction with a stranger this morning, actually, in a gas station, who just complimented me on my outfit. And then she was like, you know, I hope you find someone else in your day who you can compliment on their outfit and basically just pay this forward, you know, type of thing. But it was just kind of nice to talk to a random person like that, you know. And I talk about hanging out with strangers, which is a kind of daunting concept, but I think it all just begins with a conversation. Some sort of spoken acknowledgement where you see that that other person is there and that, you know, you maybe find a way to share a hello or something that shows them that you see that they exist there. I mean, that's the first small step. And then sometimes things grow from that. And especially if it's people who you see, you know, on a relatively daily basis or on an average basis, then sometimes those conversations can continue to grow over time.
Sheila, thanks a lot for hanging out with us today.
Thank you very much. I'm enjoying it.
That's Sheila Liming, associate professor in the writing program at Champlain College in Burlington, Vermont. We've been talking about her latest book. It's called Hanging Out, The Radical Power of Killing Time, Why It's Important to Spend Time with People. You can share your stories, by the way. Head over to the Ideas Network Facebook page, or you can email ideas@wpr.org.